Okay, we're back on record. It's 5:14 PM and Detective Hall, you are still under oath. So let's continue with your investigation. Did you interview Ms. Summer Dickerson?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
And where does she live? And could you point out where her apartment is? It would be in on the no, it would be another Wingles Upper Bellevue down here near the gate that we heard from Detective Hall yesterday.
She's the woman who called the police first.
She's over in that.
You want me to humble?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Sure.
If you want to point here.
Who's making here?
Because the gate is here and her townhouse is, I'm assuming this building.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and we, yesterday we heard her 911 call.
Okay.
So. You interviewed her when?
June the 26th of this year, 9:53 hours.
And what did she tell you about what she saw and heard that night?
She's lived at the residence with her husband for 4 years, husband Curtis and three children. The children are 11, 12, and 13. On March the 12th of 2020, she was in her bedroom with the window open, posting memes on Facebook being silly. Her bedroom window faces Breonna Taylor's apartment. She posted on Facebook, "Okay, I'm done playing with y'all." As soon as she hit post, she hears a pop and then hears a spray of bullets. Her daughter was downstairs making a sandwich and screamed. The scream was a bloody murder type scream. Excuse me. Dickerson calls 911 and runs downstairs checking to make sure her 11-year-old daughter is okay. Her husband Curtis was asleep, but all three children were awake when the shooting occurred. Her son was in his room, all the bedrooms are upstairs. His son was in his room watching something on his laptop, and her other daughter was in her room watching something on her laptop. The pop noise was a gunshot, and then she heard the spray of gunfire. There wasn't much time between the first gunshot and the spray of gunshots. She's familiar with gunfire because she has a carry and conceal permit and has been exposed to gunfire in the past. On the 911 call, she identifies a second round of gunshots, but believes it could have been the SWAT truck blowing off the parking lot gate. At the time of the 911 call, she believed the second round of gunfire was actually them shooting again. Later on, after the shooting, is when she learns the SWAT blew off the gate, and she's assuming that was the second round of gunfire. When she heard the first gunshot, she didn't think much about it because it's not uncommon to hear gunshots from someone shooting in the air or messing with their guns. It's when she heard the spray of bullets and became concerned and dialed 911. On the 911 call, you can hear her run downstairs and grab her daughter. By that time, she had looked out of the window and she sees the SWAT truck approaching. She runs upstairs, is looking out, and by this time there are tons of cops on Springfield Drive. She's still on 911 call and has her kids in the upstairs bathroom. When she was downstairs, she sees a light. When you shoot a gun, it makes a light. She's referring to muzzle flash. She assumed it was gunfire. Her townhouse apartment is positioned in a direction that she sees more of the back of Breonna's apartment building. It would be Breonna's backyard area, and she can see this area. The kids were in the bathroom, and she disconnects from the 911 call. About 10 or 15 minutes before the shooting, she had taken, she had taken her puppy outside, and she did not notice anything unusual in the neighborhood. She knows what an undercover police car looks like, but did not notice anything unusual that night. She's nosy, and the cops are outside, so she decided to go outside. Just as she was exiting her apartment, she heard the third bang or noise, but was not on the phone with the 911 dispatcher at the time. It looked like they had just blew the fence off just before she went outside. She is standing between two vehicles and she sees SWAT coming. Seeing the SWAT truck helped calm her down. She stands outside for a little bit. As she's standing, she notices one of the cops. He says, "Hey, aren't you mom?" There had just been a dance at Trunnell Elementary School, and the only reason she noticed him is he was dressed in a suit and his daughter had on a dress. She walked up to him at this point, recognizing him from the dance, and asked, "What happened?" He said, "Some drug dealing girl shot at the police." She asked, "Are you sure?" She had been recording everything on Facebook Live, and this was on her live feed. He's like, "Yeah, that's what happened." She didn't know his name, but described him as a short, black officer. He commented again, "Some drug dealing girl shot an officer." She estimated the shooting occurred about 12 or 1 o'clock. The next morning, she and her daughters are walking around the apartment complex looking for their lost cat. She was noticing canisters, maybe flashbang canisters. Police use them, and she doesn't know exactly what they're called. She thought the canisters were off. The police are doing their investigation, and her daughter says, "Mommy, that's Bree's apartment," meaning Brianna's apartment. Dickerson didn't know Brianna, but her kids knew her. Brianna was a mentor to a lot of the kids in the neighborhood. The kids were crying and upset, so they returned to the residence. She didn't want the kids seeing the apartment.
You said that when she, right before, the moment she hit post on the Facebook is when she heard the pop, the first shot?
Yes, ma'am.
And did you get a copy of that Facebook post?
I did.
And that would be... Exhibit 63. And is that the post, the Facebook post?
Yes, ma'am, it is.
And what's the time on that up there under her name?
12:48 a.m., March the 13th, 12:48 a.m.
Okay. Questions for this interview? Okay.
You said that they saw some flashbang canisters?
That's what she said.
I never saw any of that in the video.
No, she's talking about the green thing, the mark, I guess.
Anything? Detective Hall, have you discussed or had a discussion and also a phone interview with Lieutenant Steve Lacefield?
Yes, ma'am, I have.
And who is he?
Lieutenant Lacefield is the supervisor over the firearms training unit for the Louisville Metro Police Department.
And did you ask him some specific questions in regard to discharging the firearm in responsive fire, or responding fire, return fire? Did you ask him a list of specific questions?
I did.
And did you record his answers?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
I'm going to go ahead and play This was a telephone interview.
Today's date is September 21st, 2020. The time is 14:37 hours. My name is Herman Hall. I'm a detective with the Office of the Attorney General, Department of Criminal Investigations. I conducted a phone interview with Lieutenant Steve Blaisdell with the Louisville Metro Police Department. Sir, if you would, set your name for me.
Lieutenant Stephen Blaisdell.
And who do you work for?
The Louisville Metro Police Department.
And how long do you work for?
Since March 24th of 2008.
Okay. And what's your current position?
I'm a lieutenant over the Bombers Training Unit.
And how long have you been in that position?
Since October of 2018.
Relatively new position then, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
Now, how long have you been in the firearms division?
Just since October of 2018.
Okay, so that was your, you came straight into that from your other position with the Louisville Police Department?
Yes.
Okay. And I know we emailed you a series of questions, and I'll just go down that list and ask those questions, and you can just kind of give me your answer to them. What type of training does you need to give the police department?
The Bombers Training Center trains all of our recruits in handgun, patrol rifles, shotgun familiarization, and less lethal weapon systems. In addition to that, we do biannual qualifications, one of which those qualifications occur in either spring or fall. One will be the low light. The fall qualification is an 8-hour work day. Some training is provided, and then the majority of the day is to qualify with all of the officers' weapon systems, to include patrol rifles, shotgun, off-duty, secondary duty weapon, in addition to the service pistol, whatever they carry on duty. The spring qualification typically has been just an off-duty qualification with whatever weapon system that the officer carries on duty. This year, in 2020, spring qualification, we did a 4-hour block where the officer qualified with their duty pistol and received training in less lethal weapon systems.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, do you have something to say to that?
Okay.
Does your training involve men to shoot their firearm?
When we cover periodically through the years, I've only been here through the follow-up qualification thus far, and that is more of an in-service and basic training when I cover the use of force. We would review our use of force policy periodically, or at least excerpts that apply to firearms specifically for the lesson that's being put out. But when the officers are faced with a threat, death or serious physical injury, and also by statute, arson or sexual assault, so that's in defense of themselves or not.
And I think you may have answered the part A of that question. How many times a year did you give that training?
Yes, sir. One time a year.
Okay. As part of that training, are the officers trained to shoot at the threat?
Yes, if I understand that question correctly. The officer is trained to utilize their sights, have sight picture and sight alignment on a target or threat prior to pressing the trigger.
Okay. Should they be shooting to suppress or do they shoot and assist?
Our officers are not trained to shoot suppressively. We want them not necessarily shooting and assessing, but assessing as they're shooting. Our training is shoot until there's no longer a threat. So whether the threat is eliminated by the gunfire through injury or
did you ever shoot and took target and go his way?
That, yes, that does go along with that.
Should the officer have a target in sight when shooting?
Yes.
Okay. And are the officers trained on trigger control?
Can you elaborate on that one?
Trigger control, like maybe keep your finger outside the trigger guard until...
Yes. Trigger control can lead to a variety of things. So our officers are trained not to place their finger on the trigger until they have made the mental decision to shoot. And also trigger control as far as accuracy. We're trained to press the trigger appropriately so as not to put into the weapon that would drive your sights off of the target.
And the Glock 22 that we're talking about in the question here, that trigger can be reset without depressing the trigger completely?
Yes, it's called trigger reset. So when you pull the trigger all the way back, the gun fires. After recoil, the slide is operated, resets the mechanism. You just move your trigger finger forward into your ear or fiddle and click, and that's it resetting. So you don't have to take your finger completely off the trigger to go through all the travel in order for it to fire again.
Now, is the trigger pull the same?
Every time.
Does it change from a fully engaged trigger or from a reset position? Does the trigger pull change, or is that the same?
As far as what you know, it does not, just in the distance travel.
Okay. Now, do you have to have a visual idea of a person before you shoot in that direction?
Yes.
And does there have to be a target in sight for you to shoot?
Yes, that sounds like, if I understand it right, the same thing.
Yeah, right. Maybe back to the suppression. And again, you said the officers are not trained to shoot suppression fire. Are you trained to counter for every shot? Well, I guess let's reword that one. Are the officers trained to be accountable for every shot?
Yes.
And what is the trigger pull on a Glock 22?
Approximately 5 pounds per the manufacturer's statement.
Now, can that vary?
Yes.
And what's the variance on that?
Based on my experience, within a pound.
Okay.
Typically, much less than a pound, but it can be up to a pound. A lot of that also depends on the trigger gauge.
Okay. And, you know, I asked you this, I remember our meeting that we had several months ago, and I asked you this. Does your department have a policy on altering the trigger pull of a service weapon?
Yes.
And are they allowed to alter that trigger pull?
No.
And if the trigger was altered, what kind of permission would they need to alter that trigger?
We would not give permission to alter the trigger. The only case that would be applicable, there's what's referred to as a part that Glock puts in called a NYPD disconnector. And that takes the trigger, it's an 8-pound trigger. So if an officer had purchased a firearm from a private individual, or it came with an 8-pound trigger, we wouldn't want the standard 5-pound connector in there, and we would change that out at the Firearms Training Center.
You brought up something interesting, and I know that I'm asking some questions, but you brought up something interesting. Does the department supply service weapons to the officers?
Yes and no. Prior to the merger of the City Louisville Police Department and the three monolithics in our business that they purchase themselves. It's our policy, you know, when officers come on, and I believe, it's my understanding that at merger, when we were the Louisville Metro Police Department, officers have had to purchase their own weapons since then. The only instances that an officer would be issued a pistol from us is a lower pistol, if there's one down, was broken, we were working on it. They had been involved in a shooting, and we gave the guns to the public integrity unit to reissue to that officer that they qualified with, while their gun is in evidence and in litigation.
Okay. So,
or certain SWAT team issues an additional pistol as well.
But those are agency issued weapons, correct?
Yes.
And the new recruits that you currently got a class going now, the new recruits, are their weapons supplied to them by the local police department?
No, they purchase their own.
But it's got to be an approved weapon by the department?
Yes.
And what is that approved weapon?
We just, with this class, switched over to, it has to be 9mm Glock, 17, 19, 45, 34. Those are the four approved service pistols for them.
You're talking about the model?
Yes.
Not, that's not the caliber, that would be the model numbers that's approved.
Yes, those model numbers are approved in 9mm.
Okay.
Or all of those model numbers are 9mm, that denotes the caliber of it. As far as an off-duty or backup gun, the 26, 27, 19, 23 are approved for off-duty carry, off-duty or backup carry.
Okay. All right, sir. Well, I believe that's all I got for you today, Lieutenant Lacefield.
All right. Well, I appreciate it.
I appreciate your time. I'm going to turn this recorder off. The time is 14:50 hours.
Okay, Detective Hall, you had mentioned in that conversation with Lieutenant Lacefield that you had contact with him earlier this summer.
Yes, ma'am.
And did you actually see him at the Louisville Metro firing range?
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Did you actually observe him in the range with the low light condition?
Yes, ma'am.
Firing the Glock 9mm?
Yes, ma'am.
And at your request, did you request that he fire 16 rounds?
Yes, ma'am.
And did you time the length that it took him to shoot those rounds?
I did not. Sergeant Culver timed him, and it was 5 seconds.
And Sergeant Culver is another firearms instructor?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, do you all have any questions for Detective Paul on this?
What was the reasoning for asking him about the altered triggers?
I'm sorry?
What was the reasoning behind asking him about the altered triggers?
The trigger pull?
Yeah, the trigger pull.
Sometimes officers will alter those trigger pulls to make it a less weighted pull. They may take the manufacturer's pull of 5 pounds and reduce it down to a 3.5, making that trigger easier to pull.
Is this something you can answer as to whether any of the weapons used on March 13th were altered?
I cannot. I can answer that they have never given them permission to alter those triggers.
Were those weapons confiscated?
Yes, sir.
But there was nothing to ever indicate in any of your investigation or Louisville's or anybody's investigation that any of those trigger pulls were altered.
That's correct.
Any other questions? Yes, sir.
So it's 5 seconds, 16 shots it takes. You said it takes 5 seconds.
It took him 5 seconds, right at 5 seconds.
Did you say he was shooting in a dark space?
Yes, ma'am. It's an indoor range setting.
And with that simulation, were you able to confirm the question we had earlier about if you were in an illuminated space shooting into a dark space, if in the dark space would show flashes of light?
There is muzzle flash that will emit from the end of any discharged weapon. And that would be a flash. I don't know exactly, when you say light, it's not a light, it's just a flash.
And it would be where the bullet is.
It's basically burning the gunpowder. You know, the gunpowder.
It would be at the place of the gun.
I'm sorry?
It would be at the place of the gun, not at the place of the shot.
The end of the barrel is where you're going to see that flash, and that flash, it depends on the gunpowder load in that specific bullet as what kind of flash you're going to get. I mean, if I discharge the 357 hollow point with 180 grain, you're going to have a bigger muzzle flash. But if I'm discharging a 9mm Glock 22 with 155 gunpowder weight, that's going to be a smaller flash. And also, inside that room, you got to take into consideration the size of the room will also dictate the light or the flash that that will emit, you know, the reflection of that flash.
Okay.
If the room is smaller, or if the room is more encased, would flash be bigger?
I'm really not qualified to answer that question, I mean, because there are several variables that play into that. I mean, if it's got a hard, let's say you've got a concrete surface and the walls are concrete, they're painted white. You know, you would probably see a larger flash or more of a light than if it was softened by carpet, furniture, dark colored walls, stuff of that nature. So I'm really not qualified to answer. I can only give you, you know, my experiences and some of my trainings that I've had as far as, you know, what we discussed during trainings and so forth. But it would take a firearms expert to really give you the specific answer to that question.
Okay, one more question. Did the officer who was doing the demonstration, did he mention anything about spots or blindness after firing the weapon that quickly?
No, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes Detective Paul's testimony today. And it's 543, we're going off the record. 43, we're going off the record. 43, we're going off the record. 43, we're going off.